At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Fuck off.
I don't know shit about fuck.
Thank y'all. Come again.
I like sucking.
Fuck off, faggot.
Legit bad podcast.
Would you like to support this?
Welcome to Costco. I love you.
Hello, welcome to Legit Bat. I'm Joe. This is Jen.
Hello.
Ben's here.
Hello.
Early on a Friday for us and in the evening for our guest here, Mr. David Icke. And I don't think he really needs much of an introduction, so I won't even try. I mean, if you don't know who he is at this point, you've listened to our show, then go do some Googling, I guess. But he's an author, speaker. I don't think there's anything he hasn't done in his arena, which, funny enough, I looked at your Wikipedia page just to see what it says, and it's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah.
Original.
I remember. I remember going into, where would it be? Toronto. And it was to give evidence at a court case for a friend of mine. And me and Canada don't really get on. Really? And me and the authorities, me and Canadians go on very well, but me and the authorities don't go on too well. And every time I went through a Canadian airport, there was every effort made to just stop me getting any further. And I remember getting off a plane, and it's the usual thing. You go up to the passport desk, and they're all right. And they look at your passport. And they shut it, and they say, you know, go over there. So I went with this lady in uniform, who I asked her if she'd sued the place, and she said, "What? Where?" I said, "The charm school." She was very, very unpleasant. I then go into the guy, you know, who's the second look. Talking on Wikipedia, and he looks at my passport, and he looks at me, and why is this guy here? So he goes into Wikipedia, and he's looking at it for a while, and then he says, "You're famous, aren't you? You know." And we had a nice chat, and I actually got in, which wasn't really nice of doing a court case, but at least I got in.
If the first place you're going is Wikipedia, maybe you should. Check
and it should be the last place, shouldn't it? That's the point.
Yes.
It's so full of lies and misrepresentation.
Well, we've found this out through a few other guests that we've had. We've had on Sam Tripoli, Tommy Chong, and a gentleman in the States. He is a ex-Special Forces sniper, and he did 10 years called Tactical Insider, where he trained movie stars on proper weapons techniques and stuff before they would do movie roles. And he has a Wikipedia page because of his foundation, Vets for Child Rescue, which is helping out cases of children who have had sexual assault on them. And you go to his Wikipedia page and they say almost nothing about his actual charity, his actual work, everything that he's poured his life into. Instead, it's all of the stuff that is, I guess you could say, celebrity info, the stuff that he did with Tactical Insider for Hollywood and a few other things that he has cameoed in. And I brought that up to him on the show as well. And he's like, yeah, that's the thing. All the stuff that you should actually know about a person, or, you know, not even necessarily private or sensitive, but the things that actually they've poured their work into, you know, those are the ones that they don't put in there. It's all the stuff that they think you want to hear.
Yeah, I found it funny with that guy in immigration in Canada that he was getting his information about who I was from Wikipedia. I thought that was hilarious and ridiculous, of course. But of course, Jimmy Wales, who was the founder of Wikipedia, he's one of these Klaus Schwab World Economic Forum young leader graduates. I mean, they're everywhere. And what Wikipedia has done is basically hijack the version of history, the version of various events, and the version of people that the public are told to believe. And, you know, how many in academia, how many, you know, people at school and kids at school and university, and when they're doing their research for their various things, how many use Wikipedia as their, you know, foundation source when it's full of such nonsense and so unbelievably biased? But again, when you look at what's happening in terms of control of people's perception, it's done by control of the information they receive. And therefore, over a long period of time, I've been tracking this, all these elements of information communication and sources of communication, sources of information, have been either created by this cabal, we'll call it, or have been bought up and hijacked by them. So if you want to control what people receive, well, you and hear, then you do all the unbelievable levels now of censorship, and right. You control the education system, so you control what people are taught in their formative years. You control the media, which is constantly parroting the same narrative that we've seen so blatantly in the last 2 years. But then you also make sure you control other sources of information about people and events, like by controlling Wikipedia. So it's all part of the same web of controlling what you see and hear. Thus, the goal is to control what you perceive things to be.
Yep. Yeah, that's the illusion of freedom that we have, walking around thinking we're doing whatever we want, but we're really just doing what we think we're allowed to do, or what we're supposed to do because the media tells us to.
Well, that's absolutely right. The greatest way of suppressing people's ability to critically think and to look at the world from a point of view that questions it is to persuade people that they are questioning it and they are critically thinking, when all they're doing is parroting the official narrative without question. I mean, we all have, haven't we? I've witnessed this so many times in these COVID years. You hear people, what they do is they say, I'll tell you what I think's going on, I'll tell you what's going on. And what then comes out of their mouth is the official narrative from government and authority, undiluted, straight repeated. And those people genuinely think that they are coming to their own conclusions when their conclusions have been given to them. So, well, you know, you're absolutely right. It's so important to persuade people that they're not controlled when they are, because if they realize they're controlled, then a defense mechanism comes up and they start to be aware of it. And then the next question is, why am I being controlled? Why am I being told to think this? Why is this a policy of government to dictate what I think? So you're in a defensive mode, you're in an aware mode. But when you think you're thinking for yourself, when you're repeating the bullet points of government, then you have no defense mechanism. You just take them and repeat them and think it's coming from you.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to critically think about anything when you don't know what to believe. I've had that conversation with a lot of people, or, you know, even researchers. I'm like, so you research, but how much do you believe of these documents that you're researching? I mean, you're allowed to get your hands on them for some reason, so how much can you believe of that? And same with history. We've had that history's been so manipulated from who knows when. I don't even know how much to believe of the last 100 years, let alone the last couple hundred years. Have you ever got into any of that, of the, you know, 1800s, that kind of era?
Well, I mean, I've basically got into everything in the last 32 years. But you make a very valid point that I'm constantly aware of. It's what do you believe? Because I was not a scholar at school. It bored me to tears. School bored me to tears, and I spent most of the time looking out the window. I went there to be with my mates and play soccer. But the two things that kind of interested me a bit were history and geography and things like that, and English, writing English, not the rest of it. But once I started to awaken to the world in 1990, you then start to look at everything anew, because something's happened to your consciousness. You're not seeing the world in the same way. So you look at everything anew. And you start to realize that all the history you were taught at school is a load of old nonsense. It wasn't like that at all. It's like, you know, you look at the world wars as if they just broke out spontaneously. They were orchestrated by the same network to transform human society. It's a process that you could call creative destruction. You're pushing the world in a particular direction. And to do that, you have to constantly destroy status quos, because status quos, the way things are blocks to where you want to go. So you have to keep destroying them. So you destroy the status quo of the world in the First World War, and the world was very different in between wars period. And then you do it again not long afterwards, and you absolutely transform the world massively into a much more centralized entity, with the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the Bretton Woods Agreement, and all these things that came out of it, and the United Nations. It was all about centralization of power. And if anyone wants a perfect example of creative destruction, then it's the COVID period. Because 2019 is not coming back, because the status quo of 2019 has been destroyed by the COVID hoax. And so you are constantly seeing this destruction of status quos to push the world in a certain direction. Now, official history that's taught to the kids and the students, that's never even mentioned. Oh, God, are you kidding? So the whole description and official history is nonsense. You have to go looking for your own to get anywhere near the truth. And even then, you know, you get really deep into it, like, what is reality? What is this place? Where, you know, where are we? Who are we? And that level of it. And the whole thing becomes an illusory nonsense. Never mind, you know, just history.
Yeah. 100%. Ben, were you about to say something?
Oh, just a couple of things that were rattling around, going back to the freedom of choice, or the illusion of choice. It's been something that I've said for years, even, you know, prior to all of the recent nonsense that we've seen globally and nationally and microscopic level. I said, it's the idea of my son coming down and saying he's hungry for breakfast. And I say, okay, you can have, you know, Captain Crunch, or you can have Fruity Pebbles. Well, now he thinks that he's picking his breakfast, but there's a whole other world of eggs and bacon and pancakes and all of this stuff. But we end up falling into this trap where, when you're presented with a very itemized choice, it immediately makes you feel like you're choosing. when really there's a whole bunch of other ones. And I've liked our presidential election is the exact thing that I think about, where I'm like, they're just giving you the candidates that they want you to pick from. They could really give a shit less which one you choose. At the end of the day, there's 9,000 other people running for president, but you don't ever hear about those guys. All you hear about is, you know, the 8 and then the 4 and then the 2, and you think that you're choosing. And I'm like, that's not how that works. Going to Joe's point though, looking back, the more that we have and watching a few documentaries, as well as prior to him setting up this podcast with you, me and my fiance had watched Escaping the Matrix on Prime. And when he told me that he was able to schedule you, I was absolutely stoked. And looking at history, watching these documentaries, finding these things, and in this industry, being able to talk to some of the great names in these fields, you end up finding out it's like, even if some of the things in history are true, so much of the truth has either been glossed or it has been twisted. So there might be nuggets of truth in all of the lies. And that's what exactly makes it hard to decipher which part is lies and which part is just fudging the truth a little bit. And the more that you end up peeling back the layers, the more you go exactly to what you had said. Why are they trying to deceive us? And when you get to that point, the point of being in the middle where you go, oh, I don't know shit. The more that I learn, the more I realize I don't know shit. That's the starting point of starting to learn the actual things that you need to learn.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that. And funnily enough, I've worked from the premise all these years of a quote that's attributed to Socrates in ancient Greece, which is, to paraphrase it, wisdom is knowing how little we know. If you look at the way perceptions are manipulated, that whole area of there are unknowns kind of gets lost. It's founded on black and white, this is how it is. And you're right with your comment on choice. You choose this is how it is, or this is how it is. And so if we look at the current situation in Ukraine, you're given a choice of being a Putin apologist, or being a supporter of freedom and democracy by supporting the Ukraine government. When if you really research this deeply, or not even deeply, you find that actually you're looking at, and this happens with all the kind of, you know, conflicts. You're looking not at good guys and bad guys. You're looking at psychopaths against psychopaths. So the Ukraine government is actually deeply corrupt. I mean, I went to Ukraine to speak in, I think it was about 2010, when Yanukovych, the Russian-supported guy, was in charge. And it wasn't free then. Even though they had apparent elections, it wasn't free then. I was interviewed while I was there on a mainstream breakfast show, and I had a interpreter next to me who was telling me what the question was, and then was telling the questioners in the audience what I said. And I was talking about the ludicrous situation, for instance, in which Yanukovych was thrown out of office in a, quote, revolution called the Orange Revolution in 2004. And then they didn't like the guy who came in to replace him. Mm-hmm. And because of this two-party nonsensical system, again, absolutely what you were talking about, you're given a choice. You've got an illusion of choice. You've got a choice between party A and party B. Sometimes there's a C, but mostly party A and party B.
Right.
So you choose party A, And you don't like him. So in 2004, they threw Yanukovych out, the Orange Revolution, which Soros was massively behind. And then they didn't like the guy that came in, Party B. So they come to the next election and they think, well, we don't like the guy in office, Party B, so we better go back to Party A. And who was still the head of Party A? Yanukovych. So they voted back in the leader they'd thrown out in the 2004 Orange Revolution. And I made this point. I said, this is ridiculous. I was making the point about the illusion of choice, political choice. And this interviewer leaned forward to the interpreter and said something while I was given the answer. And afterwards, I said to him, what did she say to you? She said, don't interpret that. You know, don't translate that. This is when Ukraine was apparently a democracy under Yanukovych, and then because of an American coup in 2014, they threw Yanukovych out again, and he fled to Russia. And eventually, this guy came in, Zelensky. He's a total crook. He's controlled by oligarchs, and he's in many ways he's an oligarch himself. The United States controls Ukraine. And of course, this global cult I talk about controls America as it controls, you know, the rest of the world in terms of its direction. And yet what we're told to do is Ukraine, white, good guys over here, good guys, Russia, bad guys. Not just Putin, all Russians, bad guys, right? Hate them all. And
Russian cats.
Yeah, exactly. What was I reading this morning? It was Russians have been banned from a tree competition or something. You know, I'm sure Putin's ready to surrender immediately. But the point being that exactly as you've just said, you're given these black and white illusions of choice and told that you have freedom because you have choices. It's in politics as in breakfast cereal.
Yep.
And it's comfortable for people. It's difficult for people to think outside the box and take what someone's telling them who's in a position of power and say, oh, okay, well, I don't believe you. It's easier and more comfortable just to say, okay, this is good. And even if you don't agree, you at least have one other choice that you can make. And that's your escape, the illusion of escape, I guess.
Which is exactly where everybody ends up falling into, where they go, well, I don't like this guy, but I don't like this guy more. So I'm going to vote for the guy that I don't dislike as much, and the lesser of the two evils. And I'm like, you realize it's still evil at the end of it, but people do it anyway.
Well, overthrowing the system is way too hard.
Yeah, I was... find that with what people call happiness. I look at people and, you know, they tend to define their happiness by their state of unhappiness. It's a similar situation.
Right.
I feel less unhappy today, so I must be happy. I don't think many people even know what happiness is because of the way this world is run and constructed and the pressures and stresses of surviving the system every day. But it is, again, this is a fundamental point and area that we're talking about, because all human behavior comes from human perception. We behave as we do because we perceive as we do. So the whole foundation of mass global population control is based on controlling the perceptions, the mind of the people. Because if you look at the mathematics of the number of people being manipulated to the number of people in full knowledge doing it, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's insane. If you go deep enough into this cult, you get to a point where you get the people at the inner core in one room. So you can't physically control people en masse, billions and billions of them. You can in small areas, but you can't in totality. Well, they're trying to do that. This is the whole point of connecting the human brain to AI. That's massive control of what? Perception. That's what that's all about. But before they get to that point of having AI give you your perceptions direct, which is what that's all about, you have to mold people's perceptions of reality. And it's not only about telling people what to think. It's, and we're now seeing this clearly, it's about preventing access to information that might get them to think a different way. So this this censorship is not just for the sake of it. It's to a very specific end, which I said in books long ago, like decades ago. The idea is to reach a point where no one will see or hear anything that isn't sanctioned by authority. And we're moving towards that very fast. And that the reason for that is if all you receive is information pointing in a certain direction, then you are highly likely to believe it. And it becomes your perception. And if once they've got your perception, they've got your behavior, and collectively they completely control human society. This is what this is all about. It's all psychological. If you break down the COVID years, it's all psychological. These so-called restrictions of masks and social distancing and lockdown, they all had a foundation in manipulating the psychology of the population. And what it has done, I've heard a lovely phrase in the last few days where someone described what has happened as people being COVID trained. And it's like almost like training a dog, in the sense that you get them into the mode of acquiescence. So first of all, you start by triggering the acquiescence through fear of not surviving. Fear of the unknown and fear of death, which is the ultimate fear of the unknown for so many people, is mercilessly manipulated. It's fear of death and fear of the unknown that gives doctors and the medical profession and, you know, dark suits like Fauci so much power over people's psyche, because it's like, I don't know when it's coming. I don't know what happens when it happens. So I want to stay alive as long as possible. So save me, doctor. And you, people can become completely perceptually dependent in terms of their health on the medical system driven and funded by Big Pharma. That the last thing that cares [S2] Right. [S1] About is your health. So the first step in the COVID training was to get people in the spring of 2020 to acquiesce and to go under house arrest without real question. Very few people questioned it because it was, well, my survival and my children's survival might depend on it. And we saw pictures of people keeling over in the street in China from a quote virus that hasn't had that effect anywhere else, strangely, but it frightened, terrified many people into acquiescence. Some people are still terrified of it, and so that was a big kind of step in the COVID training, getting people into the mode of acquiescing. And another part of this is to get people to acquiesce to nonsensical things without question, because the more nonsensical you present people with in terms of what you tell them to do, the more you take over their psyche when they acquiesce to the stupid. So there's a few things that have gone on. This is all the psychology that's gone on. For instance, we've always had morons liberally scattered around politics and political leaders. I mean, absolutely. But if you look at the political leaders around the world, so many that have come through the Klaus Schwab World Economic Forum Young Leaders school as graduates, the level of moron is unbelievable. When you look at Trudeau in Canada, you look at Ardern in New Zealand, you look at Macron in France, Johnson in Britain, Biden and Harris in the United States, and so it goes on. And then you look at the moronic nature of so many people who were dark suit medical officials that were telling you what you had to do. And so they were telling you to follow the science, because everything, the whole psychological game is to invert everything so that what is becomes the opposite of what is, and it's the opposite of what is you have to believe is real. So everything's inverted. So we were told this was all for our health, for instance, when it was actually about destroying health, and particularly controlling the psyche. And so people got into this mode of acquiescence. Not everybody, a lot of people kind of saw it and started breaking out of it. It's great, a lot of people have woken up, but a real core section of humanity has just become like we had in the 60s on the Adam in America, nodding dogs. For some reason, people put toy dogs in the back of their car, and as the car moved around, the head of the dog would nod. I mean, why anybody wants one of those, but they did. It was quite the thing at one time.
And mostly people, really old people, I think.
Yeah, people have become like nodding dogs. You know, authority says so, so I do.
And now, time for your friendly ad break.
And the more, like I say, the more moronic the person telling you, the more obviously moronic the person telling you, and the more moronic what they are telling you to do, the better from a psychological point of view, because when you do moronic things because moronic people have told you, what you're actually handing over is your self-respect, not just your right to think and come to your own conclusions. You're handing over your self-respect. And once you've handed over self-respect, then nothing's left but submission. That's all that's left. So if you look at the difference, the psyche difference, the psychological difference between those who have acquiesced without question and those that didn't really want to acquiesce, but they did it anyway because they were frightened of not acquiescing, you look at the difference between those people and those that are refusing to bow to it. And the massive difference between the two is this group has self-respect and this group has given it away. And it's self-respect that stands up to tyranny. Obviously, without self-respect, you do what tyranny tells you. That's why these two groups, those that acquiesce without question, just do what they're told, and those that acquiesce because they're frightened of not acquiescing, those are the two groups that have allowed every tyranny in history to prevail and to be imposed. Whereas this other group that will not acquiesce to stupid and will not acquiesce to tyranny, that's the group with self-respect that has ended every tyranny in history. And the dynamic is exactly the same today as it's always been. And so this is a psychological game that's being played. You know, in Britain, just as an example, but it'd be the same in other countries too, absolutely. The government is part owner, it's called the Cabinet Office, of an organization called the Behavioral Insights Team. And this is an organization part owned by government whose absolute role is to manipulate the behavior of the population so that they will do what the government tells them. That's their brief. That's why they're there. And we've had a lady, for instance, in Britain called Susan Mikey, Professor Susan Mikey, who is a behavioral psychologist and a leading light, incidentally, in the British Communist Party, who has been a major advisor to government on masks and all these other restrictions. And she's been turning up through the COVID era on mainstream media, interviewing her all the time, telling you why masks are important, why kids should have them on their faces all day at school. And it's all psychology, it's nothing to do with health. And what we've seen is this parting of the ways, where it's always been there, but it's become more like a chasm in the COVID era, of those who acquiesce and those who won't. And you know, it's we're almost living in two societies now. Well, we are.
Do you think that was intentional too? Do you think that was manufactured to split us up like that? Because they have to know that there's a section of the populations that's never going to acquiesce, or they're just trying to weed them out so they can, we're easier to get rid of, or, you know, what's going on?
Well, I think you've picked up both points there. Obviously, there are going to be people who will not acquiesce. Now, I guess the question they had is, how many will that number be? And what we're seeing now is a lot of people who had the jab because they felt it would allow them to go back to normal. The people telling you after the jab, by the way, were the ones that destroyed your normal. And because they thought, well, I've got to do it to keep my job. And now, as these things have been rolled back, it's a stage, it's not the end. Those people are, a lot of them anyway, are looking at the situation and saying, well, why the hell did I have it? Why did I have it? I mean, obviously I haven't gone near it. And in England, I'm under no more restrictions for not having it than people who've had three. So what's the point? You know, I mean, you know, those who had it because they thought it would protect them, because they, you know, they don't read not even the big print, never mind the small print. Well, you know, they're still okay with it, but there's a lot of people who had it because they were basically bullied into it, who are now going, what's happening? Why is this happened? And why are you telling me I've got to have more? I mean, talking about four, even five now in England. And those people are moved, a lot of those people have moved over into this other group, saying there's something going on here and it's not right. So, you know, this group is getting bigger. There's no doubt about it. But going back to your two points, they knew that this group would exist. The question was, how big would it be? But it's also done something else. And you know, whenever you're in a situation, there's things you're going to have to do, and of course, people are going to stand up and all the rest of it. But in doing so, you're going to give some benefits to that you're standing up against. And so what the jab has done particularly is to highlight those people in society who A, think for themselves, and B, when they've thought for themselves, will not have it if they see that it's a scam or it's being done to enslave them. So this, have the jab or not have the jab, has been has highlighted that group that thinks for itself and won't acquiesce to what it can see is going on. And so this whole idea of getting rid of people in the military and other organizations because they won't have the jab, what that is doing is ridding the military of anyone who thinks for themselves and then won't and then will stand up to what they see. So if you want a military, for instance, that you eventually want to turn on the American people, you don't want people in it who are going to say, hold on a minute, I'm not doing that. Are you kidding? I'm here to protect the American people, not turn a gun on them. So they want those out, and they know that those non-jabbed refusers will very highly likely say, I'm not turning the gun on American people. So that they are creating this mentality within all these different levels of law enforcement, which is designed to just follow orders without question.
You think there's anything more to the jabs, though, besides just splitting people apart? I mean, the mRNA, that's not even hidden. Whether there's graphene or whatever else in there, I don't claim to know. I don't know what to believe on that. But what's your thoughts on what exactly is in the jab and what maybe it is doing?
Well, I've looked at this in great detail. you know, and not just now and not just during the COVID era, but before. And the thing is that you go a certain depth in the rabbit hole, and you'll see levels of manipulation and levels of deceit that you don't see here. And you will then become aware of some of what's going on. But if you only stay at that level of the rabbit hole and you don't keep going as deep as it's necessary to go, then you only know some of it. And it's very difficult to, at that level, to put into context what's happening. You know it's happening, but why is it happening? And the deeper you go in the rabbit hole, the more the whys are ticked. Why is this happening? So, I mean, over the last 32 years, I've actually had as much a stick and abuse and ridicule from massive elements, until relatively recently, from alternative people as I have from the mainstream. Because I've had a simple philosophy. I want to know what's going on. I'm not attached to what's going on. I want to know what's going on. I don't go with a preconceived idea, because that's the worst thing you can do, because that's when you start editing information or won't go into areas where there's information that would challenge your current belief system. So you just keep going around like an eddy with the same belief. And we go back to Socrates, wisdom is knowing how little we know. Once you realize that we actually know a fraction, then your motivation, your perception of everything is there's always more to know, always. And so you keep going down the rabbit hole when you do that. And so I ended up in areas of nature of reality, the fact that I suggest, I have done since the turn of the millennium, that this reality is actually a virtual reality simulation that we're experiencing at this level anyway. And you start to realize the way the human body is used as a prison cell, a perceptual prison cell. So people who are entrapped in the prison cell are basically experiencing life through the five senses. That's their world. So when you look at how the five senses decode reality, they see everything as apart from everything else, because the five senses can only decode, make visual reality, a tiny band of frequency, which we call visible light. The five senses basically live in a world of things like this computer and a light and a window with empty space in between. So to the five senses, everything is apart from everything else. Nothing's connected to anything else. And if you look at the world as if everything is random and unconnected, you're never, never even going to start to understand the game. Because wherever you look, whether it's this network of manipulation or whether it's reality itself, everything is connected in the end. And so the manipulation of the body and, you know, the chemicals that we have and the electromagnetic technologically generated fields that we live in are all impacting upon the body is very, very important, because it's a very key area of perceptual control, because the five senses are feeding us this world. And it's only when you expand your consciousness outside of the five senses that you start to see the world in a different way. That's what we call waking up. Waking up is what? It's waking up from the prison cell of the five senses. What are the five senses? Their bodily functions in terms of decoding reality. So as I got deeper into the rabbit hole some years ago now, you realize that actually there's an agenda for transforming the human body to make it a very different entity to what we know. And fundamental to that is changing the way that it perceives reality and decodes reality. And so when you go to Brave New World of Aldous Huxley, and his book, Brave New World in 1932, he's talking about the transformation of the human species so that we don't even procreate anymore. What we call procreation, the production of the species, is done technologically. And a lot of the things, the technology he talked about in those days, 1932, and there's a reason why he would have been, had access to that knowledge, which I'll maybe get into. That technology is now coming online. It's now appearing in the mainstream media like artificial wombs. And I saw a story about 2-3 weeks ago where they're saying actually these artificial wombs seem to be more efficient in producing children than female wombs. So from this understanding that they are in the process of changing the nature of the human body, and this is all connected to this AI connection to the human brain, etc. Once you realize they are seeking to change it into a much more synthetic state, this is why one of the exploding new disciplines in science is synthetic biology, because they're moving to a point where the body will be far more synthetic. So then you look at the jabs, and they're putting in synthetic genetic material, self-replicating synthetic genetic material. And of course, they've already killed a lot of people and damaged people's health for life. But the point, the whole idea is that those that go through this transition will be moving towards a very different body in terms of its nature that's far more synthetic, and it's this synthetic part of it, it would seem, that means that in the end procreation will not happen when it reaches a certain level. And at the same time, if you connect loads of dots into this, at the same time you've got sperm counts for human 1.0 plummeting. I mean, honestly plummeting. There was one book came out recently, which talked about if it goes on the way it's going, then procreation will not be possible much after 2045. It's been plummeting, and it's plummeting because of radiation, and you know, men who have the smartphone in the pocket. It's plummeting because of chemicals and stuff in food, drink, water bottles, BPA, all this stuff, tilt receipts. And so as the human 2.0, this more synthetic human, and it's meant to become more and more synthetic as we move on, the more that is developed, the more they want to get rid of human 1.0. And so the jabs, even in that way, have a dual role. They're going to kill a lot of people because it's self-replicating, this stuff. It's going to impact upon people more and more. And on the other side, those that do go through this transition, they're going to be a very much more synthetic nature in terms of the body. Now, what this then brings us into is the reason for transgender to have come out of nowhere and suddenly be everywhere and become the dominant political correct position in the hierarchy of political correctness. First of all, they start targeting men, you know, toxic masculinity and all that stuff, because this woke mentality, it's all been funded into existence through the schools and universities by this cult and its billionaires that serve it. So this is why George Soros, who couldn't care less about social justice, is funding all these apparent social justice organizations. Well, he doesn't care less. Do you think George Soros could care less about transgender people. Think he could care less about black people? Well, of course he couldn't. So why are you funding BLM? Ah, because you have an ulterior motive that's nothing to do with the benefit of black people. That's what that it's all about. So you have this this first of all targeting of men for two reasons. One, in the brave new world of known procreation, men are not necessary. And two, you want to reduce testosterone levels, which is exactly what's happening in line with sperm counts, absolutely, because you don't want men who are going to stand up and say no, enough. You want weak men. That's what you're doing. This is why, because China is such a massive center for this cult, that while woke is weakening and weakening men in greater numbers all the time, not least through fear of not being weak, the Chinese government is saying we've got to stop, we've got to make sure, to use the phrase, men are men in China, right? So the opposite's happening there. And they are turning the US military woke. What do you think that's that's happening on its ability to defend America? So this whole transgender thing has so many elements, but this is a key one. It's a Trojan horse. I had a phrase for a long time: when something comes out of nowhere and is suddenly everywhere, it's the agenda. Someone's pressed a button on the next stage. So this came out of nowhere. They started targeting men for reasons I've talked about. But I said at the time they were targeting men, they're going to come for the women next. Because mm-hmm. with a non-procreating human, they don't need men, but they don't need women, right? So they're going to come for them. And that's exactly what's going on. And so this whole transgender situation, and the transgender activists, apart from the inner core, who will know, but the vast overwhelming majority, they somehow think it's about them. It's nothing to do with them. This is not about creating a transgender human. This is about creating a no-gender human through no procreation. The idea is that humans have no gender. This is what the human 2.0 is eventually supposed to be. It's a con. It's a con. It's a con of the transgender people. So you have this process now that's been going on, and it's going on in the schools. Example: suddenly, for whatever amazing reason, obviously telepathy, governments all around the world and school systems all around the world had this great idea about the same time that they put drag queens into schools to read stories to children and do their thing. What? Who had that idea? Well, I don't know. It came from on high, you know. And so why? And I have no problem with drag queens. You know, I have a simple philosophy on life. Do what you like so long as you don't impose it on anyone else. But why drag queens? Well, if you want to confuse young children, because they're going to be the adults when this is really getting big time underway, then if you want to confuse them in terms of gender and confuse them in terms of their own gender, then a bloke with a beard in a dress acting like a woman is perfect to confuse you. And so in this period when this has been going on, more and more children and young people have started to question their gender. Why? Because they've been manipulated to question it. That's why they're being confused. They're being manipulated. This is the whole point. And there's another element to this, which I picked up earlier. You know, this week there's been this, again, this return of this controversy over Leah Thomas, a guy with a male body who was, what was it, 462nd or something ranked male in swimming in America, and then he said he was a woman, and now he's the top male females, what, probably Freudian slip, but the top so-called females swimmer, and so you have this situation where to quote Voltaire, if you if those that can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. Why? Because you, by going back to what we talked about earlier, if you can get people to believe absurdities, you have control of their mind. And thus, with that control, you can get them to commit atrocities. It's the same thing. And then you have the bullying element, so that people are frightened to even define woman. This is what this Brown Jackson thing was all about this week. Of course, she can define a woman as a woman, but if she defines a woman as a woman, then her woke credentials are going to be shattered and she's going to get abuse from all sides. And she is pushing this woke agenda anyway. That's why she's been put forward for the Supreme Court. And so she won't answer the question, can you define a woman? We've got a politician in Britain who's Chancellor of the Exchequer. Because of that controversy with Brown Jackson, he was asked on a radio show this week, can you define a woman? And he wouldn't do it either. They're all terrified. And the reason that this is being imposed so fiercely and with such bullying and with such consequences in terms of employment and everything is because they are pushing in the greater picture this agenda of the end of male and female into a no gender synthetic type human. And all these dots and all these movements are all connected to that.
Yeah, and it seems like Corey in the chat here says we're just becoming grays. What do you think of that theory, that the grays are us in the future, or maybe some kind of archetype for where we're headed? Seems pretty close.
Well, I've thought for a long, 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 long time that the grays are they're basically cyborgs, you know. So where are they taking humans in terms of connecting AI to the human brain? They're turning us into cyborgs. And you see, if we go into the deeper levels of this, you know, I've just finished a book, actually. It's just gone into production today, where I go really deep in the rabbit hole in terms of so much, not least the nature of the simulation and the nature of so many elements of it that people don't realize actually what they take to be natural is not actually natural anyway. But the simulation has been created to hijack human perception. So if you are only in experiencing reality through the five senses, you're only experiencing it through simulation. It's the equivalent of the simulation is the equivalent of putting on a headset when you come out of the womb, like a virtual reality headset. And what happens if you use a virtual reality headset is you can take it off and you can get another version of reality that's different to the headset. So you have something to compare the headset with that makes you see that it's a headset and this is a virtual reality. But imagine if you came out the womb with a headset on and you never took it off. And all the information you were receiving is from the simulation, is from the virtual reality. You would believe the virtual reality was real. And you would take it to be natural reality, and everything that you experience, you take to be some kind of creation. And it is, but not the creation people think it is. And so what we're seeing with this smart grid and with this Zuckerberg metaverse is simulations within a simulation. So what they're doing is that they are creating more and more layers of illusion to entrap people. So if you go into the metaverse, then you are in a simulation within a simulation. And it's, you know, the smart grid is a technologically generated field, cloud, they call it, of what? Of information. What is the Wi-Fi field that this computer is picking up and turning into a completely different expression on the screen? The only place that what we see on the screen of a computer coming from Wi-Fi exists is on the screen. It doesn't exist anywhere else. Everywhere else, that same information is in radiation form and it's electrical code form. The only place it exists is here. And everywhere else, it's just information encoded in radiation. So when Elon Musk and others, but particularly him, are putting up all these low orbit satellites, beaming 5G and Wi-Fi at the Earth, so they cover every inch of the Earth, that's the idea. We are living in the equivalent of a vast field of Wi-Fi. How does anyone think that's going to affect our perception of reality? It's like another layer, another reality layer on top of what's already, I would suggest, a simulation. And then you've got the next stage, which is the metaverse, which is coming from this Wi-Fi cloud. And in the end, you're getting further and further away from the true self, the true I, which is consciousness, a state of eternal, constantly experiencing consciousness. They've got your perception so focused that you literally don't know who you are, where you are, and what's going on. That's the idea. That's the trap. And if you look at the woke mentality, the same thing can be seen, because it comes down in the end to self-identity. What we perceive ourselves to be is what we experience. If you think you are little me and have no power, then you'll do what authority tells you, because you think authority knows more than you and has more power than you, and therefore you do what it says. You will live a little me life, not because you have to, but because you believe that's who you are, so that's what you experience. So the idea all the time is to focus attention in smaller and smaller senses of self-identity. So when I was growing up in the 50s, 1950s, you had men and you had women. You identified as a man, you identified as a woman. You might identify as your income bracket, your religion, your race, whatever. And so you are one step from realizing that you are consciousness by identifying with those labels of the human life. And the labels of the human life, when you identify with them, not that, you know, it's an experience, that's what it is, that's what those labels are, they're experiences. But when you identify who I am in totality is those labels, then what's happened is you're pulled into the five senses, because the five senses operate in the world of those labels. That's where the perception that dominates. So what they've done with the woke mentality is subdivided and subdivided into greater and greater minutiae those original labels. So now you have this long list of letters, LGBT and on and on and on it goes, where people are self-identifying their I with the minutiae of their sexuality. You know, it's pulling people in to smaller and smaller senses of self-identity. And the smaller the sense of self-identity, the less aware you are of the true I, which is consciousness. And you know, I've been saying through all these years that the bottom line of this global conspiracy is to isolate human consciousness in the five senses, and to disconnect an influence of expanded levels of awareness. Because those expanded levels of awareness are not subject to the manipulation of the simulation. They operate outside the simulation. They're a frequency level beyond the simulation. So the idea is that you manipulate people's perception and make them five sense centric, so that what happens is they're in the simulation and of the simulation, and I have no other radar to compare with. And what happens when people so-called awake? This is the process. What does that mean? Awake? They are awakening to a greater level of consciousness, and eventually they breach the frequency walls of the simulation, and they start to connect into expanded levels of awareness. And at that point, they're accessing that radar, that other way of seeing the world. And suddenly what they saw like this before, they now go, whoa, I see it. Because if you only look at the world and research the world through the five senses, you're never going to get it, because the five senses are going to keep telling you that everything's apart from everything else. What happens when you expand your awareness out of the control frequency, if you like, is you realize that everything's connected. And that means reality in general, but it also means that corporations and banks and politicians and governments and big pharma and big tech are all connected. You see the connections. And so it's you can see why they want to hold us here. Because while we're here, in terms of our perception of the way we experience the world, they got us.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how we can even never top this. You're just on a roll. I forget I'm hosting. I'm just listening. Ben wanted to let you know he had to drop out. He had to go back to work, but we're also at an hour. So we'll get you out of here. But I do, in closing, want to know where you think this is going in the next couple years, maybe in the next 6 months, maybe next decade. What's your David Icke predictions for what's going to be coming?
Well, I think that a lot of people are going to go deeper in the coma, but a lot of people are going to come out of it. I've said that by the end of 2024, early 2025, I'm not saying it's going to be over. My God, are you kidding? But what I have said is I think it's going to be clearer and clearer that this cult is losing its power. It's what is its power? It's control of human perception. That's his power. It ain't got any power itself. You know, the biggest mistake that people can make in this arena is to think that this cult is all powerful. It's not. It's pathetic. It's pathetic. It's a little boy in short trousers. The way it controls us is we live in two worlds. Two worlds in one world, and the difference between the two worlds is knowledge. So if you look at the population, there is a fierce structure, getting ever more fiercer, that dictates the information that the population receive right from the earliest age, throughout the formative years, through the education system created in America by people like the Rockefellers and J.D. Rockefeller, of course. But the same system works around the world. And what is that education system when it's not? It's a programming system. It's telling you what reality is. And there are carrots and sticks for whether you accept that or whether you don't. You accept it. You are a brilliant scholar, a first-class degree, a degree of programming. If you don't accept it, then you are a disruptive influence in the classroom. So that is there. Add the media, add Silicon Valley with all its censorship. It is holding the population in a very limited state of knowledge awareness. Unless the population expands outside of the limitations of the simulation, as I would call it, in which case they're going to start to access knowledge that exists out there that is way beyond anything you can find here. And then they start to see things in a different way. But if they don't do that and they stay within this simulation frequency band, then that knowledge is what they're going to believe is reality. And then we have this other world And this is the World of the Cult, which is a network, a global network of secret societies with an interlocking leadership, which the overwhelming, massive, vast majority of people within the secret society network don't know that this interlocking leadership exists. They think their secret societies operate in and of themselves. They don't. There might be one or two that do, but most of them, they connect into this interlocking leadership. It's a massive web of compartmentalized knowledge again. And what is happening and has happened through this, through the period that we call life, is that to the chosen few, not Bill and Joe down the Freemasons Lodge, to the chosen few in this, the inner core of this web, generation after generation, knowledge is passed on secretly, which is secret because they don't want the population to know it. Part of that information is where the world's being taken, so that if you keep that from the population, they think everything that's happening is random when it's very carefully coordinated to a particular end. And the other area, massively important, that they pass on through the secret society networks and keep from the people, is the nature of reality and the nature of the true I. They don't want people to know that. They don't want people to know who they are, where they are, or what the hell's going on. And it's got to the point where, well, probably been at this point for a long time, where, you know, the first thing I want to know is, okay, who am I? Where am I? Where do I come from? Where am I going? What is this place? I want to know that. But a lot of people, you know, the vast majority of people don't. They just don't really think about it much and just carry on. And they want to keep them in that ignorance. And so you have this knowledge that's used against the population, this knowledge of how reality works, how if they can get your perception, they've got your experience, because your perception becomes your experience. They know that. And that, because they know that's how reality works, they know that's how the simulation works, for a start. So they are using that knowledge against the population, which is unaware that that knowledge exists. So you get people who will wave their hand and say, "Well, that's a load of rubbish, mate. That's not possible." No, no, it's absolutely possible. It's just that you don't know. And funnily enough, what you believe and what is true are not necessarily the same thing. And so we're looking at a rigged game. It's not that this cult is all powerful. It's that this cult keeps its target population in a greater level of ignorance than it's in. And it has to do that because once, this is why it's terrified of humanity awakening. And I mean terrified, because it knows the game's up then. Because the game is no longer rigged once the population or great chunks of it start to awaken to see and know what this cult knows and more. So when you look at the one of the major symbols of this cult, which is the all-seeing eye, the single all-seeing eye, it's very, very appropriate that. Because it is the equivalent, this cult is the equivalent of, in the kingdom of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. They are incredibly limited. When you're in a state of consciousness that they're in, which is what you might call evil, which I define as the absence of love, and you're in this very limited state of consciousness, if you are seeking to impose your will on the population, if you have no empathy and thus you will do anything to get your way, no matter how much suffering you create, then you are not in an expanded state of consciousness. You're a bloody idiot, actually. But the idiot can control, if it keeps the population symbolically and literally in a lower state of idiocy through suppression of knowledge. And so this awakening is to the greater consciousness that we all have. It's the answer. It's the answer, because it's reversing what created the problem. And so where we go from here depends on how that awakening proceeds. Because if people stay in their box, their little box of ignorance, this is in a box, it's just in a quite slightly bigger one, then, well, if you don't remove the cause, the problem will continue. This tyranny will continue and go on its way. But if enough people awaken, this can be brought down, because it's not all powerful. It's very weak. And, you know, people, by comparison with the potential of what humanity can be. And, you know, when you look at all this censorship, which is getting more and more extreme, that's not a symbol of power. That's a symbol of weakness. These people are weak. They're terrified. Why? Because they know their narrative cannot stand up to scrutiny. It can't, because it's a pack of lies. And therefore, the only way of defending it and protecting it is to delete anything that's exposing it. So this censorship is not an expression of power. It's an expression of desperation. And one of the things that's happened in the COVID era is to an extent, it's been a learning experience for the cult, because they've had a look at it and they've thought, when we go for it again, what do we need to do before then? Because what thwarted us in the various areas this time? And one of the ways that it was thwarted, of course, despite all the censorship, was the alternative media, shows like yours and what I do, etc. And so they're now seeking, they are in Britain with something called the Online Safety Bill, pure fascism, to target the alternative media by using the term harm. So we've got a bill, a similar one going through Canada and Australia and various other places, called the Online Safety Bill, which will give power to a fascist organization called Ofcom, which was created by Tony Blair in 2001. That's how fascist it is. And it's being given power not only over the entire broadcast media in Britain, which it's always had, but also internet, which it was always going to do. That's what it was developed for. And if this law, well, not the if, when, because the MPs are all in favor of it, because they're morons, that's why they have MPs, Ofcom will be able to say this cannot be posted on the internet because it might harm people. And what they say might harm people can be perfectly lawful or legal. You could say it in the street and there's no law against it. But if they say, well, it could be harmful, and you could make a case for anything being harmful to someone, then it has to be taken down, and there are massive fines and possible jail terms if you don't. So this is not power that it seems to be. It's desperation. And the idea is that they look at the COVID 2 years and they say, what thwarted us? What do we have to delete so it doesn't thwart us next time? And the next time is not necessarily going to be very far away, by the way. And this is what they're going for. This is why they're designating through the Department of Homeland Security anyone who questions the government as a domestic terrorist. It's all part of this same process to reach a point where no one sees or hears anything that isn't sanctioned by authority, because they are desperate to maintain control of perception, to maintain control of behavior. And the only way out of here is to break out of the perceptual stranglehold that this cult, through its authority, has upon the human mind. And this is why everything they do, and I mean everything, ultimately, if you go deep enough, is psychological in its intent.
Perfectly said.
Yep.
Well, before we cut you out of here, give us the name of your new book and anything else you want to promote, and we'll be sure to send people your way.
Right. Well, the book is out at the moment. I've turned out furiously. Is called Perceptions of a Renegade Mind. And a renegade mind is different to a critically thinking mind, because a critically thinking mind can critically think and then acquiesce to what it's seen the situation to be. A renegade mind never will. It will critically think, and then it will say, well, I'm not cooperating with what I've seen is going on. So that's a renegade mind. So that's gone out. It's been very, very successful. But the one I've just finished is called The Trap. And it's not only about what the trap is, it's about how we can get out of it. Because, you know, it's not as difficult as it maybe seems, because these people are not as all-powerful as they're perceived to be. They absolutely are not. I mean, I refuse to take them seriously. I mean, I take what they do seriously, and I obviously have spent, you know, much of my life exposing them. But I'm not intimidated by them, because I think they're a joke. They're a joke. The best thing you can do is laugh at them. I mean, is there anyone with a brain on active duty that takes Fauci seriously? Have you seen him? What about Gates?
Unfortunately, there are a lot of people that do. That's what sucks.
Yeah, exactly. It just shows the level.
Look at the White House.
By the way, in terms of psychology, why have they put a senile man in the White House and an idiot as vice president? It's psychological. They've done it on purpose. They've done it on purpose because they're trying to break the spirit of Americans, and break the self-respect of Americans. And they're also saying, look, we can put anyone in the White House that we want. So it's all, even that's psychological. If we go on doing what we're doing and continue as we have, then as the saying goes, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. But we have the opportunity now to see through it. And if we do, we can bring this down ridiculously quickly, because, you know, it takes a long time for cracks to appear in a dam. But once the cracks appear, the dam can fall very quickly. So, people shouldn't see the situation that we're in as impossible. There's nothing we can do. There absolutely is. And the reason this cult is so terrified, it's incredibly insecure. Honestly, I mean, you may say, oh, look at Klaus Schwab, you know. Incredibly insecure, because only insecure people want to control everything. You show me a control freak, I'll show you an insecure person. Secure people don't want to control everything. They're quite happy with states of flux and not being able to call the outcome. You know, they're fine. You know what the outcome's going to be. But secure people are fine with that. Insecure people are not. This is why this cult has to control everything, has to control all sides as best it can, because it needs at all times to be sure of what the outcome's going to be, because uncallable outcomes terrify it. So we shouldn't give it power. I just find myself laughing. You know, I say to people, if you're frightened of Klaus Schwab, just imagine him having sex. Oh. And they start laughing, right? Well, yeah. So you can't laugh and be frightened at the same time. I mean, look at Klaus Schwab. I mean, look at him. What a pillock. and we're supposed to be intimidated by him. You know, I mean, what? So, you know, these people don't frighten you when you laugh at them. And they don't frighten you when you realize that they're pathetic and they're not all powerful. And when we realize what power we have and the fact that their power, this is their great ability. They have a real ability. It's in manipulating the target population to give its power to them in the form of acquiescence. That's how we transfer power from the population to the cult, through acquiescence to what authority tells us. When we stop doing that, that transfer of power stops. And you've only got to look at the mathematics. Someone comes out of the White House and says, we've had a discussion, this is what's going to happen, which they've been doing over and over again in the COVID era. But they come out of the White House or Downing Street, we've had a discussion, this is what's going to happen. If enough people say, we're not doing it, we're not doing that. You're joking. We're not doing that. Wear a face nappy, a face diaper. You're mad. I mean, my kid all day at school. No chance, mate. It's unenforceable. It's unenforceable once enough people won't acquiesce to it. So the whole foundation of the control by this cult of the population is the population acquiescing to the diktats of authority and thus transferring the power of no to the power of yes, sir, no, sir, which is the giving the power to the cult. The power of no is what will bring this down. You know, I made a decision when this started. I wasn't going to do any of it. And if I couldn't do something because I wouldn't acquiesce, then I wouldn't do it. And the circumstance, the consequences would take care of themselves. I'm not doing it. And I went through this whole era. I never locked down. I went out when I wanted. I never wore a face nappy. I never even had the bloody temperature thing taken. I never social distance. If people wanted to avoid me, fine, that's their choice. I'm not going to avoid them. I'm not frightened of them. And I've done any of it. And as for the jab, you must be joking. No chance. And I sit here now. I mean, you know, things can change, of course they can. And I'm meant to change, but I sit here now and there's nothing I can't do that someone in England who has acquiesced to all of it can do. Standing by it and not giving an inch is if enough people will do it, we'll bring this down. And the question is, at what point do we reach that critical mass of not doing it? You know, I think there's a very good chance that by right the end of 2024 into 2025, we might reach that point, not where it's over, but where you can see, hey, enough people are starting to do this for this cult to lose its power. And why will it lose its power? Because that which is giving it its power is no longer giving it. It's that simple.
Bravo. What a note to end it on. Man, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to get with us on our dumb little show and lay some bangers down. I know a lot of people in the chat had very nice things to say about you, so we appreciate you coming on.
Real pleasure. Thanks. Anytime.
All right. Well, have a good night, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Great. Bye.